So we turn now to the book of Micah. As is the very typical opening of most of the books of the prophets, the word of the Lord that came to Micah, the Moreshite, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, the kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. So he introduces himself, Micah, the city from which he hailed, Moreshite. The time of his prophecy, it is about the same time that Isaiah was prophesying. He was a contemporary to Isaiah. As we go back in the history of 2 Kings, and we look at Ahaz, he was one of the bad kings of the southern kingdom of Judah, and he did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord. But he established high places for the worship of the false gods in Jerusalem. Hezekiah was a good king, instituted reforms when he came to the throne. Now, prophesying during this period of time would mean that he was prophesying during the time that the northern kingdom of Israel fell to the Assyrians. The Assyrians, having conquered the northern kingdom, then invaded the southern kingdom at the time of Hezekiah. And of course, were defeated by the work of the Lord, the intervention of God. So the time that Samaria and the northern kingdom of Israel fell, so his prophecy is against Samaria and also against Jerusalem. Hear ye, or hear all ye people, hearken, O earth, and all that is therein. And let the Lord God be the witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. So his calling unto the people now, to hear God's indictment, what God is witnessing against you. For behold, the Lord has come forth out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. So he begins to use figurative language in describing the judgments of God that are going to be coming against them. And upon the mountain shall be molten under him. The valley shall be split, as wax before the fire, and as waters that are poured down from a steep place. So the mountains will be melting. And the reason for the transgression of Jacob has all of this happened, and for the sins of the house of Israel. But what is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not centered in Samaria, where they had introduced the Baal worship in the northern kingdom? Is it not the high places of worship for false gods that were established in Jerusalem under King Ahaz? Therefore, the Lord declares, I will make Samaria as a heap of the field, and as the plantings of a vineyard, and I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley, and I will discover the foundations thereof. That is, the buildings will be destroyed right down to the foundations. Now, today, as you are traveling in the middle portion of Jerusalem, leaving Shechem and heading towards Megiddo, you come to a very beautiful valley, and there is a hill in the valley that is the site of Samaria. The hills are covered with olive trees and fruit trees of all sorts. But as you turn off of the main road and you head up towards Samaria, you first get to the gate that was once the entrance to the city during the Roman period. And then you go along a column, or go along a road where there are Roman columns on either side. For the city of Samaria was rebuilt by the Romans. But as you get up to the top of the hill, you can find the palace of Ahab and of Omri. Those palaces that were once adorned with ivory furniture. Those palaces which were once such a glorious spectacle for everyone. The city of Samaria was a fabulous city set there on the hill. They thought that they were impregnable. And yet God had prophesied the destruction of Samaria. As you stand there, you can see where they have rolled the stones down the hillside. You can see the rubble. And even as the prophecy here goes, God uncovered the foundations. And you can see what was once the foundation of the temple, or of the palace of Ahab and of the palace of Omri there in Samaria. And this prophecy, of course, has been fulfilled. And you can go there today and see the fulfillment of this prophecy. It's like a heap in the field. It's destroyed, lies in ruins to the present day, the foundations of the city having been uncovered. And all of the graven images that are there will be beaten to pieces. And all of the hires thereof shall be burned with the fire. And all of the idols thereof will I lay desolate. For she has gathered it of the hire of a harlot, and they shall return to the hire of a harlot. Therefore I will wail and howl. I will go stripped and naked, the prophet declares. And I will make wailing like the dragons and mourning as the owls. For her wound, that is of Samaria, her illness is incurable. For it has come unto Judah. It's actually also infected the southern kingdom. And they have begun the worship in the groves and in the high places. He has come to the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. Referring to the Assyrian invasion. Declare ye it not at Gath. Now Gath was one of the capital cities of the Philistines. And when David was lamenting over the death of Saul and Jonathan, he made the same statement, declare it not at Gath. They hated to have their enemies rejoicing over their misfortunes. And of course, that was usually the case. The Philistines loved to rejoice over the misfortunes of God's people. You remember when they brought Samson into the house of their god Dagon. The purpose was to make sport, to rejoice over the helplessness of Samson. And so the idea was always, don't publish it, don't tell it in Gath, lest they rejoice at the calamity of God's people. Now, here he begins to use a play on words, and you have to really have a smattering of an understanding of Hebrew. The King James doesn't really give it to you here. But it's sort of a play on words. And he is saying, weep not in weep town. For Ephrath means weep town. So he said, don't weep in weep town. Or not Ephrath. Ephrath is dust town. And so he said, in dust town, roll in the dust. Weep not in weep town, in dust town roll in the dust. Sapphire means beautiful, but here is a change, and that which is beautiful shall be stripped naked. and shall be ashamed because of her nakedness. The inhabitant of Zanan, which means march, came not forth or did not march forth. So the inhabitants of March did not march in the morning of Beth Izel. He shall receive of you his standing. For the inhabitant of Meroth, and Meroth is bitterness, waited carefully for good. But evil came down from the Lord to the gate of Jerusalem, the Assyrian invasion again. O thou inhabitant of Lachish, now Lachish is horse town, bind the chariot to the swift horses. She is the beginning of the sin to the daughter of Zion. Lachish was one of the fortified cities. It was taken in the Assyrian invasion. But Jerusalem was not taken by the Assyrians, for God intervened. For the transgressions of Israel were found in thee. Therefore shalt thou give presents to Moresheth-Gath, the houses of Achzib. Now Achzib is lies, shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. So the house of lies will be a lie to the kings of Israel. So here Micah makes quite a play on words through these particular passages. Yet the Lord said, will I bring an heir unto thee, O inhabitant of Marasha? He shall come unto Abdullon, the glory of Israel. And then he speaks of the mourning, that is the shaving of their heads that they did when they mourned. And then they would shave their heads and for a period of time let their hair grow. And then they'd shave all the hair that grew over a 30-day period, and they'd take and offer it to the Lord. They'd burn it as an offering unto the Lord. And it was a sign of mourning. They do this to the present day. If there's a death in the family, then they don't shave for 30 days. And so you see many times a person in Israel, of course a lot of them just have beards, a lot of the rabbis, but we've had friends, we go over there and they'll have beards, and the reason being there's been a death in the family. So they shave and then they let their hair grow for 30 days and offer it. And it's a sign of their mourning. So make thee bald, poll thee for the delicate children, which, of course, the children have been slain. Enlarge thy baldness as an eagle, for they are gone into the captivity from thee. So the children are slain. Those that are not slain have been carried away captive. And so a time of mourning for them. Now God is giving here his continued indictment against Israel. And he said, woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. For when the morning is light, they practice it because it had been in the power of their hands. So those who were abusing their positions of power. For they covet fields and take them by violence. And he was probably thinking here of the vineyard of Naboth, which earlier King Ahab was just, you know, so doleful and all. And his wife says, what's the matter, honey? What's wrong with you? He says, oh, I want the field of Naboth and he won't sell it to me. No, I want that field. She says, well, don't worry, I'll take care of it for you. And she got some vain fellows who brought a false charge against Naboth, and the people stoned him to death. And she said, hey, he's dead. Go take his field. And so wicked Jezebel, in her taking by violence that which belonged, and so using their power for their own enrichment and their own gain, they covet fields. Ahab coveted the field of Naboth. And then through the cunning of his wife Jezebel, they took it by violence. And houses, they take them away, so that they oppress a man in his house, even a man and his heritage. So notice, here are the sins. One, covetousness. Two, violence. And three, oppression. These things were common in Samaria, and that is why the judgment of God came against Samaria, and God allowed the Assyrians to carry them away captive. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, against this family do I devise an evil from which you will not escape, neither shall you go haughtily, for the time is evil. In that day, one will take up a parable against you and a lamentation with a doleful lamentation. A lamentation was a song of sorrow, but this is especially sorrowful, the doleful lamentation. And they will say, we are utterly spoiled. He has changed the portion of my people. How hath he removed it from me? Turning away, he hath divided our fields. Therefore thou shalt have none that cast a cord by lot in the congregation of the Lord. The temple worship will cease. There will be none to take their turn, which of course they determined by the casting of lots in the temple of the Lord. Now, they were saying to the prophets of God, don't prophesy. But yet the false prophets continued their drivel. And that is pretty much more literally than what you find in your King James. They shall not prophesy to them, that they shall not take shame. O thou, in other words, don't prophesy in creating the shame in the people. O thou that are named the house of Jacob, is the Spirit of the Lord troubled or angry? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to them that walk uprightly? But even of late my people is risen up as an enemy. Now notice that even though all of this sin exists and they've risen up against God, God still maintains them as my people. O love that will not let me go, I rest myself in thee. Even of late, God said, my people is risen up as an enemy. You pull off the robe with the garment from them that pass by securely as men adverse from war. The women of my people have ye cast out from their pleasant houses, and from their children have ye taken away my glory forever. Arise ye and depart, for this is not your rest, because it is polluted, it shall destroy you, even with the sore destruction. If a man walking in the spirit and falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and of strong drink, then you will make him the prophet to the people. They didn't want to hear God's word. They told Micah, hey, don't prophesy to us. And yet, if a fellow would come along and I'll sing to you of good days, of wine and strong drink and all, then they say, hey, you're our prophet. We want to hear you. Men haven't changed much. They don't want to hear really of the judgment of God that is to be meted out against a sinful generation. They want to hear all is well. All's going to be good. Don't worry. It's all going to work out. Cheer up. Keep your head up. Think positively because we're going to come through on top. And people say, oh, tell me more, tell me more. As the whole thing's going down the tube. And so they don't want to hear the truth. And God is rebuking them that they will not listen to his truth. They would rather hear a lie than the truth. But the Lord is talking now of a remnant that he's going to work with. I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of thee. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. And I will put them together as the sheep of Bozrah, as the flock in the midst of their fold. They shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of men. The breaker is come up before them. They have broken up and have passed through the gate and are gone out by it. And their king shall pass before them and the Lord on the head of them. Now the Lord speaks of the coming judgment that is going to come against those that have gone into captivity. And I said, hear, I pray you, O heads of Jacob, ye princes of the house of Israel. Is it not for you to know judgment? who hate the good and love the evil, who pluck off their skin from off of them and their flesh from off their bones, who also eat the flesh of my people and flay their skin from off them, and they break their bones and chop them in pieces, as for the pot and the flesh within the cauldron. Then shall they cry unto the Lord, but he will not hear them. He will even hide his face from them at that time, as they have behaved themselves ill in their doings. For thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets that make my people err, that bite with their teeth and cry, peace. And he that putteth not into their mouths, they even prepare war against him. So God is speaking out against the people now because of their evil deeds, the judgments of God that are going to come, though they don't want to hear of it, but it must come. Their prophets are saying unto them, peace, but by that they are causing the people to err. Therefore, night shall be unto you, and ye shall not have a vision. And it shall be dark unto you, that you will not divine. And the sun will go down over the prophets, and the day shall be dark over them. Then shall the seers or the prophets be ashamed, and the diviners will be confused. Yea, they shall all cover their lips, for there is no answer of God. God is not going to speak to them any longer. The voice of God will be silent. And of course, such became the case for 400 years, until John the Baptist came in the wilderness. But truly the Lord said, I am full of power by the Spirit of the Lord, and of judgment and of might to declare unto Jacob his transgression, to Israel his sin. Hear this, I pray you, you heads of the house of Jacob, and the princes of the house of Israel, that abhor judgment and pervert all equity. They build up Zion with blood and Jerusalem with iniquity. For the heads of the people are taking bribes, and the priests are teaching for hire, and the prophets are divining for money. Yet will they lean upon the Lord and say, is not the Lord among us? No evil can come upon us. So here was a corrupted leadership, both municipal and spiritual. The heads of the people, the judges of the people, the city councilmen were taking bribes. The county supervisors. The ministry had become a profession. Professional ministers teaching for hire, and the prophets divining for money, and yet saying, hey, the Lord's with us, no evil's going to come. Therefore shall Zion for your sake be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become a heap, and the mountain of the house as the high places of the forest. Jerusalem became a heap. At the present time, Professor Shiloh is digging through the heap that was Jerusalem at the time that Micah prophesied. For though Jerusalem was spared from the Assyrians, the Babylonians later came, and Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem, ravaged the city, broke down the temple, the walls of Jerusalem, destroyed the houses. And even now, interesting excavations are being made in what they call the Hill of Ophel, which is just above the Pool of Siloam. And it's that hill that goes from the Gihon Springs and Siloam, where Hezekiah tunneled underneath. Above that, the hill that goes on up, which is actually what they call Ophel, the city of David, but continues on up to the Temple Mount. So it would be a part of the Mount Moriah. As they are uncovering now the rubble of these houses where the people lived at the time that Micah was prophesying. These very houses in which the people were living then are being uncovered today by the archaeologists. And the interesting thing, that as they are uncovering these houses, they are finding just multitudes of little idols, false gods, that the people were worshiping. And they've come across a collection of little idols like you can't believe. They've made quite a display of them. Where these people, just as the prophets were warning them, had turned to idolatry, and because of that idolatry, they were going to be destroyed. Now the prophets were saying, oh, everything's all right. You know, is not God with us? But God was ready to bring His judgment. But in the last days, or in the later days, and so we move on out into yet the future. This has not yet happened. Oh, far from it. But it's going to happen. And I'm convinced it's going to happen in the near future. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. God is going to establish His throne upon the earth, and the mountain of the house of the Lord is going to be established. And many nations shall come and say, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord and to the house of the God of Jacob, and He will teach us of His ways, and we will walk in His paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He's talking now about the kingdom age. When Jesus comes and reigns again, and God shall give to Him the throne of David, and He will order it and establish it in righteousness and in judgment from henceforth even forever. And the nations will be going up to Jerusalem, for out of Zion will come the law of the Lord. They'll say, come, let's go to Jerusalem, and let's sit at the feet of Jesus and just learn for a while. Hey, those are the days when I'm really wanting to take the tours to Israel. When the Lord is there, sitting on the throne, reigning in Zion. Won't that be exciting? And thank God we won't have to go on these old 747 jumbo jets. God will have a whole new mode of transportation for us. And we'll go, and when we arrive, Jesus will be there teaching us the ways of the Father. And we can sit at the feet of Jesus and just learn. For the law will go forth out of Zion. Oh, that's glorious to me. What an anticipation. And He will judge among many people. He will rebuke the strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And nation shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Now, I get rather upset when many times politicians make reference to this verse and intimate, if you'll just vote for them, they will bring in this age. It will not be brought in by any politician. It is not going to come until Jesus, the Prince of Peace, comes and reigns in righteousness. This is not something that man will ever be able to effect. In fact, we're doing just the opposite right now. We are beating our plowshares into swords, so to speak. What this says to me is that in the kingdom age, the military budgets, which are, boy, almost bankrupting us here in the United States today, the military budgets will be diverted to agricultural development. Now, this past year, the nations of the world spent approximately $1 trillion for weapons, for armament, for defense. $1 trillion. Imagine if we had spent $1 trillion this past year to develop agriculture. You would not have thousands of people starving to death in Cambodia, other thousands more in the deserts of Odin, nor would you have them starving in Ethiopia. There would be enough for everybody, and you wouldn't be paying a dollar for a loaf of bread. If we would put this much money in feeding the world, you see how twisted man's values become when he's governed by his greed and by his lust rather than by the Lord? Because it is necessary for us to arm ourselves, to defend ourselves from being subdued by the enemies, there has been a misappropriation of funds. And money that could go for the betterment of mankind is being spent to destroy mankind. How twisted are the values of sinful man? More money in the budget to destroy than to aid and to help. Now, I'm not arguing with Reagan's budget. I feel that the defense budget is necessary because I know what Russia has done and is doing. And if we're going to survive, we've got to be strong. But it's tragic that we live in a world where there are those who are greedy for more power and more control, who have to be stopped and will only stop through the threat of force of arms. It's a sad world that you live in. It's a world that is preparing for war. A world that is coming to another gigantic conflict like our minds cannot imagine or conceive. As nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. But there's light at the end of the tunnel. After the next major world war, men will realize, hey, there's no profit and there's no future in this. And Jesus will come as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And we will have one ruler over the whole earth. And He will establish His throne in Jerusalem on Mount Zion. And then, and only then, will they beat their swords into plowshares and their swords into pruning hooks. And they will not learn war anymore. They'll begin then to divert the resources towards the betterment of mankind, towards agricultural development, towards just a better overall life for everyone. In that day, they shall sit every man under his vine and under his